Richard.
Hi, Gaspar.
How are you doing?
Doing pretty well, thank you.
And you?
I'm okay, thank you.
Wonderful.
So, what are we going to talk about today?
You are going to talk a lot.
Yes?
Because I'm asking a few questions about your work in France.
Yes, you will.
Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about your experience working with youth and children with emotional and mental limitations, psychotic, right?
Yeah, psychotic, autistic.
Autistic.
Borderline.
Yes.
It's a combo you're going to hear a lot in the podcast.
Yes.
Yes, I'm going to share with you guys some of my experience, and it's going to be one of two episodes.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a lot, so we decided to not be too much
In one, yes. But I think the audience will be pleased to listen to you and your experience.
I think they're going to be delighted.
Oh, my God. I'm not sure of that, but
they will have
to be. No. Seriously, now, I think it's a very moving podcast, you know, as you relate the experience of working with some of these kids, in particular one that you developed a program for him.
Yeah.
So I think it would be very moving, and it will offer the audience in what way psychoanalysis can be offered outside the usual setting.
Yeah. I want to add that people should listen to the podcast thinking that everything I say in this episode is right from memory. I did not prepare, and so I want to point that not for you to admire my capacity to remember, but actually to listen to how memory can be of a different quality when an experience happened with, to put it very broadly, psychosis.
Mm-hmm.
That there's something of an experience surrounded by psychosis that you end up remembering, I would say, in a more physical way.
Yeah.
I think
that people will notice.
Please listen to the end of the podcast, because there are a few things I will complete or correct from the discussion we had.
Yeah. Just to put in context, the audience should remember that we record the content way before, and then we record the introduction at the end a few weeks later.
And, of course, I guess you can't hear it right now, but our audience can. The music in the background is not the same as usual. And maybe you will understand why later in the podcast.
Yep.
If you have any questions, comments, send us an email at discussions@psychoanalysis.pm.me.
You can also use our Facebook page, or access SoundCloud, or Twitter, or... Oh, it's not Twitter anymore.
It's
X,
Twitter.
Whatever. Okay. You can reach in any way that is easy for you.
My name is Grégoire Pierre.
This is Edgar Francisco Danielson.
Welcome to Discussions on
Psychoanalysis. Je sais pas moi, là-bas. Et tout est neuf et tout est sauvage.
No, no, what I mean is that would you like to go immediately to your work with kids?
How else would you want to do?
No, I'm asking you. You're the one who's going to respond.
Yeah, but
okay, Grégoire, I know you trained in France and you worked in France for a little while. Well, for a long while, maybe. You were working with kids.
Yes.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
Can you give us a sense of what were your tasks and responsibilities there? What were you doing with kids?
So, I was trained in France at the University Paris 7.
Mm-hmm.
And when you enter the third year of college, you have to do an internship.
Yes.
It has to be at least one day a week.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no idea where to look, what to do. And one friend there told me, you should contact this place. It looks like a little school for kids. There are many, many kids and they're looking for a lot of interns. Wonderful. Because usually
perfect.
You go places and they're like, no, get out.
We don't need interns. Yeah.
So I contacted this place called L'École Expérimentale de Bonneuil-sur-Marne, which can be translated as the Experimental School of Bonneuil-sur-Marne, which is a place near Paris. And I went there without having any idea what I would find.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found was a place full of kids moving around everywhere. And
like playing or running or...
Running. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you have to picture two suburb houses next to each other in suburb of Paris. This is the main place. And there are some extensions.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, that's it. It's two houses with big backyards. And you have people working there. So what was I supposed to do there? As an intern, they ask you to participate as much as you can.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually ask you to come twice a week instead of just once.
Mm-hmm.
And I was interested in that, so I went there 2 days a week instead of just one. And you have to start early, and you leave around, I don't know, 5, 6. And you start around 9, I would say, or 8:30, I can't remember exactly. And basically, you have a discussion in the morning where you have two groups, and each group is going to meet in one house. And in the morning, we lay out the plan for the day.
Okay, yeah.
Who's going to do the writing work group? Who's going to do the workshop? Who's going to do the painting workshop? Who's going to do the let's go on a walk workshop?
So every day would change? You would have a different responsibility?
Well, you would participate to a different activity every day.
Okay.
Some activities are offered multiple times a week, but rare to have. I think I don't remember things being offered every single day. Maybe beside classes, because you also had some more traditional classes. And you had to just go with the flow and you participate in the activity and they tell you, you be yourself.
Mm-hmm. I have two questions. One is, is this part of the public system in France or this is a private organization?
It was and it still is public.
A public, okay. What do kids have in common, if anything?
Well, psychotic, autistic, and severely borderline.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's like a firework of symptoms. It's crazy everywhere, but it's good crazy in some ways because it's welcome by the environment.
Mm-hmm.
Not welcome in terms of asking for more, but welcome in terms of it's okay, but how can we work together? For instance, the first day I came in, there was this young girl and she had a lot of stereotypic. Those very obsessive movements.
Oh, stereotypical movements. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so she said something like, look, it's been, well, a long time. I think it's been more than 20 years now. So I might be, my memory will get things.
I'm sure it's not worse than mine. Go ahead.
So it's just for the audience to know that it's just a memory. Okay. And she would say, she told me like, hi, how are you? Hi, how are you? And then she bumped very strongly her head against the wall.
Oh my.
And once and twice and three times and four times.
Oh.
And then someone comes in and someone is like, you're going to hurt yourself, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then the girl's like, I know, but I don't care. And then she goes away. This is the kind of, it's welcome.
What do you mean welcome? That is acceptable or that...
Yeah, maybe welcome is not a good term in English. People didn't attack the symptoms.
Ah, okay.
That's more what I mean.
That's an interesting phrase. They don't attack the symptoms.
Mm-hmm. That's the way we spoke all the time.
Yes.
Don't attack the symptoms.
Uh-huh.
Don't ask for more, but don't attack it.
Mm-hmm.
Don't enforce the need they would feel to look normal.
Mm-hmm.
Normal in quotes.
Quote unquote.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's public, meaning that you would have people with families with very different social and cultural backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I guess it was free probably for the families.
Yes.
And it was only kids. So as soon as you were not a minor anymore, you would have to find another place.
Another place. Okay.
It was inspired by another experiment that happened in France, I think, during World War II. Because during the war, a lot of people died because of starvation.
Mm.
But a majority of people with disabilities died because they couldn't survive.
No.
All the structures around
them. They didn't have enough capacity to mobilize themselves.
Yeah. I mean, if you have Down syndromes, if you're completely delirious, psychotic, or completely autistic, it's going to be very difficult for you to actually create a system by yourself in which you can get food, etc. Even when you're well-functioning neurotic, you're going to be in a very difficult place.
Correct.
And so in France at that time, I think they created, some people got together, I think that's the idea, and decided to create a frame in which people with disabilities would actually work.
Mm-hmm.
Not work like you work at Amazon or like this kind of very debilitating work, but work to survive.
Yes.
Like, okay, we're going to, I think they took over or they rented or they got access to a castle, and then they would work on the farm and they would have vegetables. Anyway.
So they would become self-sufficient.
Something like that.
By and they working together.
And they would also create connection with the villages around, etc. You would have an attempt to answer the question, how to integrate the crazy in the society.
Mm-hmm.
Not the crazy like the neoliberal crazy, which are, from my point of view, way too included in the society. But
that's
it is crazy. Neoliberalism is crazy. It's insane. It's an insane theory.
It's insanity, of course.
It's insanity. But it's very well established in society. So I'm talking about a different kind of crazy, more like psychotic, autistic, and severely borderline crazy. I think it started with this castle, which I can't remember the name of right now. And Bonneuil was a continuation inspired by that, but for kids.
Mm-hmm.
The idea was we are going to make workshops. So the term workshop is actually can be misleading because it's not about, I know in English it translates, it's a good translation for the word I have in French, but this idea of work is misleading. It was not about working.
Mm-hmm.
It was about creating.
Mm-hmm.
So we would have...
Creating together.
Yeah.
Okay.
We would have the painting workshop. It's not just about painting and working on painting. It's about a place where kids were offered a possibility to paint, to create through painting. You know, I'm maybe playing with words, but the intent...
So it's not didactic in the sense of teaching them technique?
Yes,
or
it's not.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's not because those kids were not available to that.
Mm-hmm.
And to impose that on them would be sadistic.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yes.
It was a place where it's named school because the intent was to give to those kids a sense of normalcy. That if they were to, because some would leave Bonneuil to go to a more normal structure,
mm-hmm.
to allow them to talk about their past and say, I went to school too. So it's named a school in that way. And if ever they talk to kids who actually go to public school, they can also tell them in the playground, yeah, I'm going to school too. And that creates a sense of normalcy that allows to create connection.
Connections links with other people.
You don't have to pretend that you're not psychotic, but you also don't have to be ashamed of it.
Mm-hmm. And your role there as an intern?
So as an intern, you are helping.
Helping.
You're helping the what we would call there the permanent, which I think in English would be more like the resident, those who are actually are employee of the school. So you participate in a workshop, and actually, if you want to, you can create your own, which, as you can guess, I did.
Of course you did. Because you're very creative.
Well, because, yeah. That's the only explanation. Yeah, I created a workshop with... What happened is that there was a specific teenager who had severe autism, severe in the sense that he had very poor motor control. Mm-hmm. He would always be, twisted in his body. Mm-hmm. He had very, very little access to language. Mm. And he had this very specific, I would say, way to communicate, which was singing. And I remember that when it was someone's birthday, he would go close to the person and, like, you know, drooling and like with his completely broken body and be like, like this. So, oh, and this teenager was difficult because he was grabbing things. So it was very, very, very little use of words. And so he wasn't really integrated as much as other kids in workshops. Mm-hmm. He was very integrated in the life of the place. But he required...
He could not access verbally other people.
That was a common...
It was a common feature?
Feature for many kids.
For many of
not
the kids,
to be able to talk. But he was also very regressed, touching you, grabbing you, etc. And so Sandy and I, so the other intern, at some point were like, okay, well, why not try to create something for this one? Because he's walking around the two houses at many different points during the day, so he's pretty much free. He's like a captive audience. So let's try something. So
what did you create?
Sandy and I thought, okay, he's communicating things through music, so let's try to think about music. And the first idea I had was, he is severely autistic, he is regressed, so we need to find music that are in alliance with that. So I thought we need reggae and we need trip hop. And it was the time where Massive Attack, do you know?
Yes.
And the song Teardrop. Okay, we need something with strong low frequency. Boom, 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 boom.
And the rhythmic, idea would be very like, rhythmic.
My idea was like, we need a slow and repetitive rhythmic with low sound to mimic the sound of the baby within the body. So we started like that. I had an MD player at the time because I was on top of my game. Well, it didn't work out for the MD players, but it was very practical because you could edit your file very easily.
Oh.
And the sound would stay good quality, not like, you know, audio tape where every time you edit...
You lose something.
You lose quality and then it's very crap. Because I wanted high quality sound, because I thought, because if it is autistic, it must be highly sensitive to the variation in the sound that he hears.
Mm-hmm.
Am I correct? I don't know. Was I correct? I don't know. Mm-hmm. But those were my thoughts.
Yes.
And so I thought, okay, I have the MD player. I'm going to bring in some speakers and I'm going to record on my MD, on my MDs, some songs. And so we're going to listen to the songs with him.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to sing and see if actually he can stay with us. Because usually you bring him in a workshop, he stays 5 minutes.
And then he goes away.
He takes the door, he opens the door and he's like, you see, I think that's the striking part of working intensely around psychosis or intense borderline, is that your body remembers. Your body always remembers, but you have this kind of very profound imprint in you. And I would say that if you don't have it, then you weren't there enough.
I see.
The imprint that it does on you is, I think, highly related to the emotional availability that you have to work in such places.
To work with these people.
One thing to keep in mind when you visualize everything I'm telling you is that I was dressed just like I'm dressed with you now.
Mm-hmm.
Everyday clothes. It was an imperative there that no one would be dressed up.
Oh, uh-huh.
Because we didn't want to, as if it was my place. Like, but I felt like I belonged. It was really a transformative place for me. And I think I'm very lucky that it was the first place I went to.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't want to have costumes, in quote. Mm-hmm. Like, you go to the hospital and the medical staff is going to be dressed differently.
You recognize
a doctor. You recognize authority. A nurse. Exactly. Just like when you go to a church.
Yeah.
And you recognize
the priest.
Yeah, because he's dressed like a crazy, goofy guy.
Oh, well.
That's my particular church and other places of cult.
Very good.
That's the one with crazy clothes. Yeah. that's him. That's the important guy.
Oh, my.
Anyway, so, yeah, everybody was dressed casually because, I mean, respect was earned, not given.
Mm-hmm.
To put it simply.
Yeah.
So if you couldn't behave in a professional way, you were just not professional. It had nothing to do with the way you dressed.
Yeah.
So we would work with, I'm going to call him like I called him in my little, it's a report. I did like a...
Your internship?
Yeah, like 20, 30 pages long report. So I'm going to call him Luis. That's not his name.
Mm-hmm.
So we would be with Luis. At first we were, since we thought, okay, he's going to be so difficult and we don't want to be physical with him, we are going to have the workshop, the activity, in a little room with a window that's actually adjacent to the garden in the backyard, not in an office inside the houses. We were there. We asked him if he wanted to come. You know, like this very baby, early baby-like kind of voices.
Yeah, very regressed.
And he would come, like, you know, hunching towards us. And we started and we were like, okay. At the time, Luis had a lot of epilepsy crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Is that how you say?
Well, episodes.
Yeah. He would just like fall down,
have
saliva, etc., the whole thing. So he would wear a helmet, so that he wouldn't break his skull.
Yeah.
You know. But he also looked dumb.
Yeah.
You know, with his helmet, and nobody else was wearing a helmet.
He looked different.
Yeah. A bit dumb, like in a sense, it was kind of humiliating.
Okay.
It was a protection,
which
we understood the need for, but it was also humiliating and kind of...
Singled him out.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So for this activity, we decided with Sandy, no helmet.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to take the risk. We're going to be two with him. if he has a crisis, one of us is going to be able to hold him. And or at least to slow down the fall. Also, I should say, Sandy insisted at the beginning, and I understood later on why it was so important. She told me, I agree to work with you on this activity, but I don't want us to do something occupational.
What does that mean?
She said, we have to find a meaning to what we do.
It was not about spending time.
Yeah. It's not just us listening to music with Luis and be like, okay, bye-bye.
Yes.
No, we had to find a meaning to it. We had to think about it, and we had to hope that it would bring something to him.
Mm-hmm.
So the first time we were in this very little room, and when I say little room, it's like the size of your couch.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. Very, very little. Mm-hmm. With a very big window to the garden in the backyard. So everybody would see us.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, as much as I really love this place, the first reactions were not what we expected. The first reactions were, don't even try to work with Luis. What are you doing?
It was a waste of time?
Yeah.
Mm.
Oh, and then it was, oh, you're listening to music? Really? Not everybody, okay? Just to be clear, it was not a complete insult. I mean, a complete attack from the whole institute. But some people, to our surprise, were like, what? Again? So we call the activity La Nuba. The Nuba, so it's like the, let's party. Okay? It was a fun way to name it. It was in a way to show that, to illustrate that it's not a very serious activity, but it was also a term that was so opposed to what Luis would show that we thought, okay, this is good, like this tension.
Mm-hmm.
Because Luis was so regressed that to imagine that he could have fun and dance, etc., with his broken body, no way. So we had that idea. And the first time we were very surprised because actually Luis stayed with us. He sat on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember vividly that the image we had, we felt, Sandy and I, he looked like a little girl.
Mm-hmm.
The way he was sitting on the table, moving his leg back and forward, holding his body with his arms, you know, the arms holding the table.
What do you think that meant?
Well, I think, to put it very simply, I think it meant he was happy and content.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know what to do with it besides the fact that we thought, okay, that's it. We're on. He's okay to be with us.
Began to engage.
He seems to understand what we want to do with him.
Mm-hmm.
And he has actually a lot more potential than we thought. I want to insist, Luis's body was broken.
Mm-hmm.
You have to imagine someone whose head is always tilting on the side,
and
in front of him, also
and forward as well.
Like his legs, the knees were centered, like you know, and the feet were externed.
Okay.
I don't know exactly how to say. Like his arms were kind of crunch. Like so, to have this body, all of a sudden, sit by himself on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And balance his legs back and forward, listening quietly to the music and laughing. And it's like, okay.
Something was happening.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's how it started. I'm going back to people making fun of it. There's something to say about interns coming someplace, somewhere, and questioning what's happening. And that's why Bonneuil wanted to have a regular, important influx of the interns because they needed to run the show, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Because it was very demanding work and they had a lot of high ambitions. But also, and it was mentioned directly, because interns were here to question what the residents were doing. That when you stay in a place for a very long time, you dry yourself up.
You could become rigid or not. You don't see more than what you've been doing.
And so interns were here for that, and we took that very seriously. I remember some kids were like, ah, Luis is dancing, ah, and, you know, like making fun of it. And I think looking back that it was anxiety provoking because Luis was the most handicapped of all of them.
Yeah.
And some people might think, oh, if you go in a place where everybody's disabled, everybody's going to be lovely, etc. No.
That's not how
that's
it goes.
Not the case. They are disabled, but they are still very much human.
Mm-hmm.
So they do create hierarchy.
Mm-hmm.
And Luis was at the bottom of
those
hierarchy.
Hierarchies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was important, even without their conscious knowledge of it, that he stayed like that.
Mm-hmm.
And even if he was never going to be a threat, because he was never going to, and he never did, from what I know, really move beyond. I mean, things got better for him, but he would never learn to speak. He would never learn to read, to write, etc. So, but still, the fact that he was not as damaged as he was supposed to be was a shock.
That's an interesting perspective that perhaps in an unconscious way that they were othering Luis, almost like projecting away the bad object. And this is the one, it's not me. Yeah. That is the one who is the bad
That's
object.
That's the really crazy.
The one who is very unstable or crazy or bad object, generally speaking.
Mm-hmm. Maybe not bad object in terms of people were not mean to him.
No.
But he had to stay in the place.
Yes.
And correct. His place was the bottom of the well.
Of the hierarchy.
Yeah. It was important.
Mm-hmm.
We did the activity for a whole year, a scholar year. We eventually moved the activity to a different place where people wouldn't be able to watch.
Mm-hmm.
A place that required Luis to actually walk. And it was important for us that we didn't treat him like a worthless human being.
Mm, yeah.
We knew he had difficulties. It was not about denying that. But we also knew he could walk.
Mm-hmm.
We found a place in one of the basements.
Yes.
And I think every Monday, so we would have an hour of activity. So the activity would be eventually become, we go get Luis. We walk with him to the place.
Mm-hmm.
We don't help him walk. He walks with us. We set up the speakers and we start the playlist. And we were able to sing, to dance. We were able to stop, but the music would go on.
Mm-hmm.
And we were not allowed to hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometime Luis would try to hurt us, to bite us,
yes,
to twist us,
uh-huh,
you know, twist our arms,
mm-hmm,
and say, no, you can be excited, but you have to express it in a different way.
Yeah.
If you want to show affection, you have to do it differently.
Mm-hmm.
We worked a lot on the playlist because we wanted to make sure that we liked the songs and that we could tolerate the songs. Okay?
Course,
and we wanted...
We don't want to be in a place listen to awful music.
Okay. No.
What do you mean then?
I mean, okay. And we wanted live music because we thought live music is more spontaneous, more creative,
mm-hmm,
than music in the studio.
Yeah.
And so it would be beneficial, mm-hmm, for Luis. Music we could tolerate, what I mean by that is music that wouldn't touch us too hard.
What do you mean by that?
I remember specifically there was a song I wanted to include from a Belgian singer called Lara Fabian. And the song was called J'y crois encore, which can be translated as I still believe, mm-hmm, in it.
Ici rien ne parle, rien ne bouge. apparaît sur écran vivant, isolé, vaincu, sans doute aliéné, pas même un battement. J'aimerais qu'on me ramène, je ne reconnais plus les gens, seul tout au fond de ma haine, la peine est mon dernier amant. Il faudrait que je me lève, respire et marche vers l'avant, bâtisse à nouveau la grève enterrée par mes sables mouvants, et me souvenir de celle qui n'existe plus vraiment, redevenir la rebelle et la bête vaincue par. J'y crois encore. On est vivant tant qu'on est fort. On a la foi tant qu'on s'endort. La rage au ventre. J'y crois encore. À tout jamais jusqu'à la mort. Le silence.
And I mean, Sandy and I were just like crying like rivers. Fontaines, I don't know. Can't remember the expression. During the song. And after that, we saw it, we discussed it because, you know, we had a debrief every week after Louis went to another activity. And we were like, no, we have to hold the frame. If you and I are crying like babies, it might be cathartic, but we here for Louis.
Yes.
To be sad is a thing. To feel sadness is a thing. If we break down, we're not of any help.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to find songs that we could tolerate in that sense, that wouldn't be too sad. Because, of course, you're listening to this song by yourself, which I did, and I was like, oh, that's good. The themes are good. Like, it resonates with me and my relationship with Louis. And then you with Louis, and you're just like, I just can't. It's too much. Like, okay. It's too close to, how do you say in English? Like, too close to home?
It hit too close to home. You seem to be pointing out to frame.
Yeah.
And so one question that comes to mind is, you mentioned that one statement was, do not attack the symptom. You were talking now about frame. The experience in that school was psychoanalytic? The approach was psychoanalytic?
Yeah.
Okay. Can you expand a little bit what it meant to be psychoanalytic with these kids, this population?
It's the way you treat people.
Mm-hmm.
Are they fellow human beings or are they foreigners?
Mm.
The place was created by Maud Manoni, who was one of the early followers of Lacan.
Okay.
Parenthesis. Sometimes I hear people say that Lacan said you can't work with psychosis. It's like, oh, what the fuck are they talking about? Like,
yeah.
Some people say Lacan didn't want to work with transference. I don't know, weird things like that. And I'm like, I'm not a Lacan groupie. Like, I think there are some very interesting things in him and in his theory and some others. I'm just like, not so much for me. But still, Maud Manoni was a Lacanian. She mm-hmm. created a place that was filled with psychoanalysis. And we worked with psychotic.
Mm-hmm.
No problem about that.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you're not going to be like, oh.
It's a different technique.
Yeah,
it's a different,
you're not like, the frame oh, tell will me look about different. Your mother. Tell me about your father. Which we don't do.
By the way, exactly. Though, patients do.
Yeah, well, they talk about it. Of course, well, why not?
Yeah.
They are important.
Yeah. Patients who come to the therapy and say, I don't want to talk about my parents. 3 weeks later, well, my mom. Okay, here we are.
But that's not the kind of technique
not
and frame.
At all. You think mm-hmm. psychoanalytically. Mm-hmm. Let's put it this way. You think psychoanalytically, meaning you try to give a meaning to the symptoms. Mm-hmm. You don't impose the mm-hmm. meaning. The meaning is just a threshold to more and more understanding of the person.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Not an end. Mm-hmm. And also, you try to be very down to earth. I remember, actually, with an example with Luis Chandra, who after that was my supervisor in France, who was a psychiatrist there. He mentioned that a few times to give... Chandra used to give this example with Luis. The two of them were working in the backyard and going to the early meeting. And Luis was holding a wooden stick in from a branch in his mouth. And Chandra looked at him and was like, "Luis, that's disgusting." Mm-hmm. And then Luis dropped it. Mm-hmm. And Chandra said, "This is the kind of intervention we want."
I see. Yeah.
I also remember one day I was with another teenager who was also nonverbal. And I was like, "Oh, X, Y, and Z, could you write the grocery list for me?" Mm. And the teenager did. Of course, if you ever were to actually ask this teenager, "Now we're going to write. Could you write?" Mm. It's just going to look at you and be like, "Da, da, 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 da," and walk away.
Yeah.
But in those moments, you know, you have this kind of normal interactions. And it's not something you can control. It's not something you can create artificially. But you address the person in front of you as a normal person. Mm-hmm. You evacuate the fact that they are very much impaired. And in those moments, sometime the child or the teenager is going to take that up and react accordingly.
I see.
And that's something that was said frequently, is that as much as we say, you know, like when you work with neurotic patients, be sensitive to other kind of dynamic, psychotic, perverse, autistic, if whatever you want, narcissistic. The same goes on with the kids at Bonneuil. They are not always completely crazy. Sometimes they get out of it for a brief
or have some awareness
more, you know, they are all of a sudden more integrated, but it doesn't hold.
No.
And mm-hmm. when you work with those people on an everyday basis, mm-hmm. then, or I mean, it was twice a week, but all day, mm-hmm. you know, it's not like you're in your office. You go in, all the kids are running around, you sit for the first meeting, then everybody goes to their activity, you go to an activity, then you have a break, then you have another activity, then you have lunch, everybody eats together, mm-hmm. and second meeting for the afternoon, then, you know, you're with everybody all the time. So you get to see those movements.
Yeah.
But anyway, you can access that through unexpected moments in which you forget who you're talking to. Mm-hmm. We see that all the time. You're talking to someone online, you don't know if this person is a man or a woman. All of a sudden, you know, you switch the way you talk.
Yes.
Whichever way you switch, you switch. Because mm-hmm. all of a sudden, you associate fantasies to that person. Mm-hmm. The same goes with those kids. And when you can all of a sudden disconnect from those fantasies, mm-hmm. then you offer them a space to grow. Mm-hmm. If you only think, "Oh, poor thing. Oh, he's psychotic, so he's actually structurally and inevitably and handicapped and there's nothing else," you don't help them. So you have to hold this very...
Well, even there in the psychosis, they are communicating something. And to be attuned to that communication is, I think, quite a challenge for those of us who never work with people who are most of the time in the psychosis event or episode.
Well, if you want to work with psychosis, you have to work with your body. Mm-hmm. And to let yourself be affected, which is draining. But that's the only way to do mm-hmm. it. And which makes it very difficult. And probably which creates, which is part of why there is a much lower offer for this population in terms of treatment or
therapeutic treatment,
because if you want to be serious about it, it's completely draining. Mm-hmm. And the results are not going to be productive.
Mm-hmm.
When you work with mostly neurotic patients in your office, it's reasonable to think that they really might be significantly better off at some point. And then have a better job, have a better pay, have a better mm-hmm. position in their life. With those kind of patients at the school, that's not what you're working for.
The horizon is different.
It is different. You.
It's about the certain connection, human-to-human connection.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is this person going to be able to maybe not pee on himself for a day?
Mm-hmm.
And if for a whole day is successful, it's like, great.
Mm-hmm.
It seems yes. like there's a better sense of limit in his body, mm-hmm. a slightly better sense of self. Wonderful. If the girl I talked about at the beginning doesn't bounce her head against the wall 10 times, but instead just twice, great.
That's progress. Yeah.
It's not something to take lightly. It actually is. But to have enough people who agree that the feedback they will have from their patients will be that kind of feedback,
mm-hmm.
well, you're reaching for a much smaller pool of clinicians.
Okay, so we have come to the end of our podcast, but I think you want to add a few things, right, Gregoire?
Yes. Now that people have a better sense of what I went through working at Bonneuil, I want to clarify a few things, because since then I reread my clinical notes. And so when I said that there were many kids, actually there were 40 kids with a similar number of adults, but not all the kids were present at Bonneuil directly, because Bonneuil is, and I guess we will go back to that more next month, it's an institute that it's spread apart institute, meaning une institution éclatée, meaning that we try not to focus too much of the transference into the three little houses. So some of the kids or teenagers, or they actually go visit other places, families that welcome them, not their families, but some families connected
like
to
school. Foster families?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not foster in a sense.
In the sense of long term?
No, but families that they know and they have activities with, or sometimes it's... it can be places where they work, etc.
Mm-hmm.
Also, as I said, it's not two houses, but three, just to have a better sense, like suburb-style houses next to each other. Another point, at some point in the podcast, I refer to a castle that was used to welcome psychotic, autistic, very disabled people during the war and after, so that they don't die of starvation.
Yes.
And I couldn't remember the name of the castle. The castle is called La Forge, just for people if they want to look it up. Yeah, at some point I mentioned the fact that we used live music with Louis. And when I was rereading my notes, I realized that we used it because we realized that it was more animated when the songs were live.
Mm-hmm.
And then we guessed that it was maybe because of the intensity of the music, because of the investment. You know, it's people are playing live. It's not recorded with each instrument separate lines and edit it. You know, there's a. It's our hypothesis that that is why Lewis was more
in the music. You could hear other people.
Yeah, I mean, music live from a concert.
From a concert,
you hear the crowd.
Okay, so it feels more like a community of singers.
Anyway, that's why Lewis was actually more animated by that. So you ask me, and we go back to that more, I guess, next month. But you ask me, like, how Psychoanalysis influenced the way we worked. And to put it very briefly, we did think about our activities with psychoanalytic concepts in mind. Just as a starter, the concept of the holding environment, the concept of to include a third, the imaginary realm. We included fantasies, desires. We were thinking in terms of separation issues, archaic processes. And the idea was to help Lewis, and in the case of Lanuba, but other kids in other activities, to actually transform a little bit from primary to secondary. It wouldn't happen like it would happen with an usual neurotic person, but still something of an elaboration that we wouldn't just do. We would do actually to help the kids metabolize some thinking.
Yes. So moving from primary processes to secondary processes. Okay, got it.
I mean, that's the goal. It doesn't really happen that much, but still, if you don't have that in mind, it really creates a very different dynamic in the way you work. Also, I think a very interesting idea that I recalled reading my notes was that, and that's something I kept in both in my work and as an analyst and in other aspects of my life, is really the importance to accept our own limits, the limits with which we could welcome a child or a teenager, so that we wouldn't end up mistreating them or stigmatize them.
Correct.
When you're working in your office, you don't have anybody to remind you of that, but it's so very important to feel like, okay, this is too much. And instead of denying it, and then, you know, put the burden on the patient to actually be the one who works on it. That stayed with me. Otherwise, yeah, you tend to attack the patient. Like, they are
you'll become
they're resisting.
Yeah,
they're the bad they patients, resisting. You know? Yeah. Oh, he's crazy. Yeah. You know? Oh, he's crazy, I can't do that. The neurotic version is he's resisting, or she's resisting.
He's resistant, yes. That's the patient says, you look tired. And the analyst says, why are you being so aggressive with me?
No, you're tired. No. Error.
Yeah. You're wrong, as always. Right.
Instead of just saying, actually, maybe I am.
Maybe you are picking up something that is...
Maybe during the flow of the session, you will be like, yeah, I wonder if me being tired also triggered some of your associations.
Exactly.
That's it for today. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Enjoy the new music.
Yes, the new music at the intro was in relation to Lanuba.
And the one you're listening to right now is also. See you next month.
Until then,
bye-bye.
Des malins qui parlent haut, des oubliés privés de mots. Petite. ferme tes bras, ferme la porte au diable qui m'emporte, au diable qui m'emporte, au diable qui m'emporte.